All right.
Orkin should be coming.
Okay, so it'll come. This is we're being Makdish, Joe's new house. Well, not new house, but new interior. New interior. Mazal tov on the shiputz.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for hosting. You should also have in mind all of our brothers and sisters throughout the country, especially in the south, who are being fired upon and are in danger. Hopefully it won't come all the way up here, but we have them in our minds.
He said maybe it could happen that it could come to Tel Aviv. Who knows?
All right. Matnitin, we're on Ayin Bet Amud Aleph. I know it doesn't say it at the top. Right at the top it says Gemara. Mm-hmm. We're not doing that Gemara. We're doing the one in the middle over there. Anybody know what Perek this is? This is Perek Shmini of Sanhedrin. You know which one that is? No, Perek Chelik is 11. Actually, it's a funny thing. Perek Chelik is 11, but it's really 10. That's a funny thing. Perek Chelik in our Mishnayot and our Gemara is 11, but really it's supposed to be 10, and 10 is supposed to be 11, as Tosfos points out in the first Mishnah in Makot, because the first Mishnah in Makot is a continuation of the last Mishnah of Perek 10 of Sanhedrin, which means it's really supposed to be at the end. Separate story. This is Perek Ben Sorer Umoreh. Right, so the beginning of the parak talks to the Ben Torah Umoreh. It's one of the most exciting parakim in all of Shas. It's not very long, and it's all jam packed. It's really, really great stuff. And we're doing the second Mishnah. I think it's the second Mishnah. Maybe it's the third Mishnah. Third Mishnah, at least. Maybe even fourth. All right, we're doing the Mishnah Nayin Bet Amud Aleph. It's right after the section of Ben Torah Umoreh. So in other words, we've passed it already, and that'll be important because of the reason why this Mishnah is here. Mishnah says, Hababa Machteret Nidon al Shem Sofo. Haya Baba Machteret es Veshavar es Achavis, im Yesh Odamim Chayav, im Yesh Odamim Patur. So, why is this Mishnah here? Anybody want to take a stab at why this Mishnah is in this parak right now? So the halacha that they're talking about here is a baba machter, somebody who comes tunneling into somebody else's house. Okay, so they dug into the person's house. So what's the halacha? Nidon al shem sofo. What does that mean? What does nidon al shem sofo mean? Well, what does it mean literally?
According to the end, to his end. To
he's judged according to what he
will end up
doing. What he will end up doing. Right? What he will end up doing. What does that mean practically?
Rashi said.
Well, it means that we treat him as though he was killing or about to kill somebody, which means that we're going to target him with extreme prejudice. We're going to neutralize him, as they say. Right? The Natrello tone.
Sounds all too familiar for some reason.
Yeah, we're gonna take him out. Now, why is this Mishnah here? Yeah. Why is this Mishnah here? So the giveaway should be the phrase Nidon al Shem Sofo, because that phrase is exactly the phrase that's used for the Ben Sorer Umoreh himself. Why do we kill a Ben Sorer Umoreh? The boy hasn't done anything that's worthy of death. He hasn't killed anybody. He hasn't done anything. He stole from his father. He ate a lot of food. He's been hanging out with the wrong crowd, but he didn't do anything. So the Gemara says Nidon al Shem Sofo. He's judged by how he will end up doing. We make an educated sociological, psychological guess that the Torah gives us the ability to do. We don't do it often or ever, but we have the ability to make that guess about what he's going to do. And so too over here with this guy, he hasn't done anything yet. All he's done is he's tunneled into your house.
Is there anyone else? Are there any other Mishnayot which has similar
Nidon al Shem Sofo? No. No, but of course this is the preamble to the general din of how you deal with a Rodef, which in the next Mishnah that we don't have is Matzilin Otan Ben Afshan, which is a different phrase entirely, but it is somewhat poetic also. So here you have Nidon al Shem Sofo, but then you have the second half of the Mishnah that says, Haya baba machteret v'shavar tachavit im yesh adamim chayav. So literally translated, this means if he came in the tunnel and he broke a barrel, if he has blood, then he is liable. What does that mean? So often damim actually means money. Here that's not what it means. It actually means blood. And what does that mean? Yes.
I'm asking the state the saying or the quote is if he has blood.
Yes.
Okay. What does that mean?
If he's killed something.
If he there's is, blood on his hands?
If he is going to, if he was going to kill somebody.
But I didn't know if he was going to kill somebody.
Yeah, that's
good. So that's what the Gemara is going to get into. But if you look at Rashi, im eino ra'ui lehareg. So, I mean, yesh lo damim actually means the opposite. Yesh lo damim means that we don't think he's going to kill anybody. Now, what is that? What is the phrase yesh lo damim? It means he has blood, which means he is alive. He is alive, meaning he is not ra'ui to be killed. He's not the kind of baba machteret that you would kill, just trying to explain the words, and therefore he's going to be chayav for anything that he steals or breaks. But of course, the interesting part is the end of the Mishnah, which says that im ein lo damim, he's patur. You have this almost counterintuitive thing, where if the guy was liable for actually being killed, if there would have been a reason to kill him, then he's actually patur from paying back if he happens to break anything, and if he steals something. Let's just leave it that way.
We've done that before. You get the more serious punishment if you've done.
Good. So if you look at Rashi, we'll just throw their Rashi in there.
Is this like a
You mean, did he break anything on purpose, or was it by accident? The Gemara will get into that. So Ein Lo Damim, Rashi says, Kegon Shar Kol Ha'Adam Shinitan Rishut LaBal HaBayit LaHorgo Patur MiLashalim DeChiyuv Mita VeChiyuv Tashlum Min Bayin KeEchad. Because the liability, the monetary liability, and his corporal, I guess, I don't know, the fact that he was ra'ui to be killed, Chiyuv Mita, came at the same time. V'Avabi Shinitzal Patur Min HaTashlum Min. And so even if he survives, nothing happened to him, he's patur. The kaimalan chayavei mitot shogigen kagon shelo hitcher bahen ein mishalmin mamon sheim hamita afabi shei naragen. Because we hold, now Rashi is pointing something out here. In the end of the day, the guy is not going to be chayav mita. Not, I should rephrase that. He's not going to die. He didn't die, and he's not going to die. Right? In other words, nobody actually killed him in the heat of the moment. And if he gets caught later on, does he have a chiyuv mitah and beit din?
No.
So why should he be patur? After all, at the end of the day, nothing happened to him. And nothing's going to happen to him. So Rashi says, I'll give you another paradigm for this. We have a rule that ein chiyuv mitah and chiyuv tashlumin. When chiyuv mitah and chiyuv tashlumin bain ke'achat, you only have to worry about the chiyuv mitah. You don't have to worry about the chiyuv tashlumin. That's in general true. But that even applies for isurim, that in certain situations you have no chiyuv mitah. So for example, what about Shabbat? What happens if you violate Shabbat and you were stealing and you did it at the same time, but your violation of Shabbat was only shogeg? Now, Shabbat, b'mezid, is skilat. If you are, you get hatra and everything, and karet if not. But b'shogeg, it's only a korban. So, in that case, what do you mean chiyuv mita and chiyuv tashlumin? There's no chiyuv mita, it's a chiyuv korban. Nevertheless, the Gemara quotes Tanit v'chizkia that even when you violate the Averah b'shogeg, you're still going to be patur. This got a lot of shaking heads when we learned it the first time. Not this Gemara, but when we learned the actual original Gemara, and I think we did it in Ksubas. I think we did. Maybe if it wasn't Ksubas, it was somewhere else. I remember we had a long discussion about that and why it was fair or not fair. Don't want to go into that discussion again now, but that's the rule. And so Rashi takes that, though. What does he do? He takes that, and he makes a very interesting, speculative extrapolation. He says, well, we have an example of a situation where a person doesn't actually have a chiyuv mita, but it's something where he potentially could have had a chiyuv mita, and therefore he's patur from tashlumin. That's the shogeg. And we're going to take that, and we're going to import it into the case of the Baba Machteret, where in the heat of the moment he would have been killed, but he wasn't. And he's not going to later. Which means there was a potential for him to be killed, and that's enough to make him patur from tashlumin. That's how Rashi reads this whole Mishnah. And this is like the Iker Din. This is the whole, you know, there's a lot riding on this. That's how Rashi reads this.
I mean, if you want to steal someone's very expensive painting, do it on Shabbos.
For sugar on Shabbos.
We talked about this last time, yeah.
That plan is not very sugary to me.
We talked about this last time about the starting a fire in somebody's field. That was actually the example that we gave. You want to start a fire in somebody's field, do it on Shabbos. Except, of course, you violated Shabbos. Right? So, So that's the Mishnah. There's a lot to say about that, and you know what? Let's jump into the Rashba right away. Actually, look at the Rashba. Actually, you know what? No, we can't. I'm sorry. Can't do the Rashba yet. Yeah, can't do the Rashba yet. We'll get to it later. Fine. Gemara. Amar Rava. My time in the Machteret, Chazaka ein Adam Amir Asma al Mamono. Amar Rava, Rava says, what's the whole reason for this whole din? Now, this is a pasuk in the Torah, by the way. In Baba Machteret, the whole thing is just a pasuk in the Torah. In Baba Machteret yimatzeh haganav hukav amet ein lo damim. Im zarcha ha-shemesh alav, damim lo. Shalem yishalem im ein lo v'nimkar b'gnevato. The phrase damim lo and ein lo damim, that comes from the Torah. So none of this is just Chazal making things up. This is din daraisa. It's actually interesting that Rava should ask such a question. My taima. Right? It's almost surprising. Like, I don't know, the Torah said so. But either way, Rabbi gives an explanation. He says, because chazaka ein adam amir asma al mamono. Step number one, a homeowner will not easily give up his money. He won't let somebody just walk into his house and take everything. So what will happen? Hai meimar amar iazil na ka'ila pai velo shavikli. V'ka'ila pai katil nalei. The guy, the ganav, knows as he's going in, he says to himself, I know that if I run into the homeowner, he's not going to just let me walk out with his famous statues and his laptop. So he's going to confront me. And if he confront me, I am willing to kill him. That's the only way to go out. And so because so step one is the owner will not let him take anything. Step two is that the rotzeach actually knows that and will do something about it. The ganav, thank you. The Baba Machteret knows that, and he will take care of business if he has to. And therefore, v'hatorah amra im ba'al hargacha hashkem hargo. Step three: the homeowner has to know that he has the right to stand his ground. Right? That's actually the name of the law in America: Stand Your Ground Law, which has been enacted in some states and not in other states, with all kinds of intricate rules. Which, in the heat of the moment, I don't know how anybody could possibly, actually process what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. But there have been cases where people shoot robbers who are already fleeing, who are already running away. There are even cases where they're not even on the property anymore. There have been cases where people call up the police and say, there's a guy here, I'm going to kill him. And the police say, you're not allowed to, do not do anything, just stay put. And they do anyways, and they get prosecuted.
That was a case in the UK a few years ago.
Yeah,
there was a farm. There are cases where farmers got hurt in the house if they tripped over something and they sued the homeowner and they won.
No.
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
Yeah. You also need, if you have a dog.
Okay, possibly.
If you have a dog, you have to have the sign. Dog, there's a.
So that if a robber comes in, he can sue you for the dog attacking him?
If the dog attacks him, a robber can sue you.
Even if he acknowledges that he broke into the house? Okay. How could that be?
Liberals. I mean, sorry.
But no, but like...
No, you're right. It's not... It's beyond logic, but it does happen.
Okay.
And it's,
all right. Fine. So that's the logic for this din. Now, the Gemara says... Okay, so are we okay with that? That logic? That's the logic. Now comes Rav.
The guy sued someone for falling through his roof.
What?
The guy sued someone for falling through his roof when trying to break in.
When trying to break in.
The same thing.
So now we get into the problem, though. Now we get into the one that's going to make us even more uncomfortable. We get to Rav. Okay? Let's take a look at what Rav says. Amar Rav, Hababa Machteret, V'natal Kelim V'yatza, Patur. Alright, doesn't sound so bad on the face of it, except what did he say? A person comes into your house, he takes things, and he leaves, he's Patur. Alright, that's, he's Patur, presumably because... Yeshlo ein lo damim, but the Gemara says my time but damim kananehu, because he bought it with his blood. Now, what's the implication of here?
What he bought?
The things that he stole. When I first learned this, I think, or at least today when I was learning it, I was reminded of I had a friend of mine who, when I was in high school, so he used to cheat on like basically every test. And we were in the honor class. So, like, you know, he was a smart guy. He, otherwise, he wouldn't be in the class, but he used to cheat in every test. And he came up with the most ingenious ways of cheating. Like, he would, like, copy and then shrink the font in the copy machine so that he could fit it into certain things. He worked so hard. And I remember saying to him one time, like, Joey, you know, if you studied as hard as you cheated, you would do fine. And I felt like he deserved all the grades that he got because he worked so hard for it. So that's how I like.
Today?
That's
he, President of the United States.
No, but he is. No, he's
probably a lawyer.
He was. I mean, presumably he was Chozer B'Tshuva because he married a big Talmud Chacham's granddaughter. Whatever. Sorry. So that's what it sounds like, and Rava is appalled, and Rava says, "Amar Rava, Mistabra Milti Derav B'Sheshiber Deleitnu Aval Natal Lo." Rava says, it must be that Rav is talking about a case where the guy stole the barrel and then it broke. And he's pater because he shouldn't have to pay back because ein lo damim. But if he has it still at home, he doesn't have to give it back? No way. No way Rav would say that. But the Gemara responds, V'ha'elohim, Amar Rav, afilu natal, daha yesh lo damim v'nansu chayav, alma b'rishute kaimi, hachanami b'rishute kaimi. So the Gemara says, no, but Elohim is exclamation. It says, but no, but look, it says, Rav said, afilu natal. And what's his rationale? That if yesh lo damim v'nenso chayav, that if he would have damim, in other words, if he would be liable, and he did something to it, he would be chayav to pay for it. Alma b'rishute kaime. That means that he has some kind of kinyan on it. It means he has an attachment to it. Because if he didn't have an attachment to it, he wouldn't have to pay for it to the owner. Hachanami b'rishute kaime. So therefore, that means that if it's ein lo damim, he also has an attachment to it. And now the only question is whether he should have to pay back. And he doesn't have to pay back because ein lo damim. In other words, he has ownership. He has some kind of kinyan on the object. And on the other hand, he doesn't have to pay back. He doesn't have to pay for anything. So it remains his. That's Rav's rationale. Rav's rationale is that he has an attachment to the object. And on the other hand, he doesn't have to pay for it. So therefore, he can keep it. If he didn't have any attachment to the object, if he had no kinyan to it, so then he has to give it back because it's not his. It belongs to that person. But he has an attachment to it and he doesn't have to pay back.
But
so he can keep it.
The kinyan.
A ganav has a kinyan. A ganav has a kinyan. What? How can he not have a kinyan? Because he's a ganav. I don't know, because the guy didn't give him permission to take it. So what gives him the right?
So then what gives
him the Kiddush?
I'm confused.
He does have a Kiddush. That's what we learn from the fact that if he did have damim and he did something wrong and it broke, he would be chayav. That means that he has some kind of kinyan on the object. Because if he didn't have any kind of kinyan on the object, then he wouldn't be chayav for ones. For ones. Who's chayav for ones?
Sure.
A shoel, and that's actually the Gemara says that, or yeah, well, the Gemara is going to say it, but in a different way. But yes, the point is that you have to have an attachment to the object to be chayav for onus. If you don't have any attachment, then you're not going to be chayav for onus. Maybe. So that's how the Gemara explains Rav. So you have this incredible din that Rav thinks that this ganav is actually going to get away with the Mona Lisa. He'll keep it in his house, and then, because he was dangerous at the time, he gets not only to not pay back, but he gets to keep it. He doesn't have to pay back, and he gets to keep it. It's there. It's right there, mocking everybody. Nobody's allowed to go into his house and get it back. It's his. The owner can't go get it.
You can sell it back.
It's one thing if he ripped it, and then the owner can't, you know, has no recourse. But it's right there, and he can't even take it. It's amazing.
Sell it back to
him. Yeah, he could sell it back to him.
It's ridiculous.
Okay, so but it follows its own internal logic. So let's see where we go with this. So So the Gemara says velohi. This is Rava actually. This is Rava speaking. Rava says that's not correct.
Mi di dava ah.
Shoel. So Rava says exactly this. He says, what are you talking about? What do you mean he has a kinyan in the object? He doesn't have a kinyan in the sense that he owns the object. He has a kinyan in the sense that he has liability towards the object. The same way that a shoel has a liability towards the object. The shoel has no rights to the object. He actually has rights to the object. But he has mostly liability to the object. That's the sense that he has a kinyan in the object. That's what makes him chayev and onus. But he doesn't have any rights to the object. He doesn't own it. That's Rav's conclusion. That's Rav's conclusion, but Rav disagrees. Tanan. Bama machteret, v'shiveret achavit. We're not done with it, by the way. Don't worry. The Mishnah says, Bama machteret, this is our Mishnah, Bama machteret v'shiveret achavit, yesh lo damim chayev, ein lo damim pater. Gemara concludes, taima de shiber, dechi ein lo damim pater. Because he broke it, because he has no dam in his pater, hanatal lo. Sounds like the Mishnah is saying that he's only pater when he's ein lo damim if he broke it. But the inference might be that if he had stolen it and kept it, then he would be chayev, like Rava against Rav. So this is a disproof of Rav based on the Mishnah. Rav has to answer this. So the Gemara says, "Hu adin da filu natal nami v'hadik." Rav says, "No. Even natal. So why do we have to single out shiber? V'hadik atani shiber tachavid kamash mo dechiyesh lo dami mavagav the shiber nami chayav." It's teaching you the opposite. It's there for the first clause where he does have damim, and it's teaching you that he's chayav, even though he did it by accident. He walked into the house. He was sneaking through the house. Like, you know, Rashi, he was sneaking through the house and he stepped on the dog's tail. And now you have to take the dog to the vet to fix his tail. It was an accident, though. He didn't mean to do it. So should he be chayav? So maybe he shouldn't be chayav. It was an accident. Now, this is not going to get very far. Right? Pshita. Maziku. But he's a mazik. Hakamash. So of course he should be chayav. He's a mazik. So the Gemara says, no, Akamashma da filu shelo b'kavana. No, it's teaching you that even though he's mazik below kavana, by accident he's still going to be chayv. So the Gemara says, that's not any more satisfying. My kamashmalan, what are you teaching us? Adam, muad, lolam. There's no such thing as accidents. There's no such thing as coincidence when it comes to the law. There's no such thing as accidents. Man is always liable. Doesn't matter whether when it comes to nezikin, when it comes to damages, when it comes to, you know, making mistakes in terms of killing people. Of course, there's shogig and Shabbos, there's shogig. But when it comes to damages, adam wad la olam. Now, there's a massive machlokas between the Ramban and the Bali Tosos. If there are cases where a person actually is pater, for example, we know that the halacha is that if you go to sleep if you go to sleep next to an expensive vase, and then you roll over in your sleep and you knock over the vase, you are chayav. That's adam wad la olam. However, if you were asleep and then someone put a vase next to you, then there's a machlokas rishonim whether or not you're chayev in that case. That's ones gamur, where you somebody else did
it.
So that's a machlokas. But in all other cases, adam wa adolam. So why do we need this Mishnah to tell you that the ganav is pater? It doesn't make any sense. So tinyana adam wa adolam bein b'shogig bein b'mezid bein bonus bein b'ratzon. That's the end of it. Kasha. This is interesting, though. It's a Mishnah. It should be a Tiyufta. It should be a rejection of Rav. They leave it as Kasha. Usually Kasha happens when you have two Amoraic statements that are, you know, that are contradictory, or even Tanaic statements that are contradictory, so they end in a Kasha. But here it's Rav versus a Mishnah. Why is it Kasha? Something occurs to me right now, which I hadn't thought of before. Let's see if the article says it. Let's see the room. Where it says Kasha. Okay, so they actually have an explanation for what. Oh, I think Rashi will say it. Hold on. Where's Rashi? Rashi. Kasha. Kasha Majinta Teruta Aliba de Rav, or Mikoma Kom Tiufta. Oh, Rashi, Baruch Hashem. Tiyufta lo have. Rashi says it's not a tiyufta. Tiyufta would mean it's a refutation. That like it just knocks him out of the water. The lav behediktani. La behediktani la natal chayav. Because it doesn't actually out and out say natal chayav. It's just an inference that we learn from the Mishnah. Vigil lishnei bedoch kal kedeshanina mishum reisha nakad. You could come up with other explanations for why the Mishnah picks shiber. It doesn't have to be dafta natal. I might have said though also that we have a general rule that Rav Tanahu Palik. Sometimes Rav argues with Mishnayos and we let him. Because he was such a, he was on the border over there. He was on the, it was a first generation Amara, and so Rav actually has the right sometimes to argue with Tanaim, but they don't say that. Fine. So Kasha. Now the Gemara is not finished with the subject though. Here it has a question going the other way. Meitiv Rav Bibi Barabaye. Rav Bibi Barabaye quotes the following brisa: Hagonev kis b'Shabbos chayav. This is the original din of Kam Leib D'Rab. I should have said. Well, you know, let's read it. Hagonev kis b'Shabbos chayav. Sharei nitchayev b'gneiva kodim she'avol ediyaser Shabbos. Hayam agarav yotzei pater. Sharei yaser gneiva v'sarskila b'ayin ke'echad. Okay, so this is the original din of Kam Leib D'Rab Minei of Ein Mita v'tashlumin b'ayin ke'echad. What's the halacha? The halacha, there's two halachot. If you steal on Shabbos, if you steal from somebody's house, right, and you picked it up, at the moment that you picked it up, you stole it. And then you walked out the door, and you took four, you know, walked, you know, the moment you walked out the door, actually, you were chayev and hotza'a, if there's no Erev out there, whatever. So are you going to be liable to pay back for what you stole? Yes, because they weren't buying ke'echad. You stole, and then a few seconds later, you performed an iser of Shabbos. However, if you didn't pick it up, but rather, you dragged it. All right, so you took his dog and you pulled it by the tail out of the house. So you never picked it up. So you didn't do a kinyan hagba'a, which means when did you actually perform the kinyan? When you left the house. And that's exactly when you did the Isra Shabbos. And in that case, you're not going to be chayev to pay back because
the Shabbos
came. Because you're chayev in Shabbos. So the idea over there, though, is that guess what happens to the dog? It sounds like what happens to the dog is you keep the dog. That's what it sounds like because it's a putter. It doesn't say you broke anything. It just says putter. Putter from paying back. So you can keep the dog. So it sounds like Rav. So Rava jumps in and says, no. Hilchado deshadnehu b'nahara. No, no. The Mishnah just left it out. But what happened is that after the guy left the house, he chucked the dog into the water. Right, that's already disturbing. Maybe we should pick a different object. He threw the object into the water and it disappeared, so he didn't have it anymore. So it's the equivalent of breaking. So Rav kind of like flipped it around and just he the same thing that Rav would have to do to the other Mishnah, so he does to this Mishnah. So he says, you know, it's not talking about where it's still existing. If it would be extant, he would have to give it back. That's Rava being consistent. So now that's the conclusion of the back and forth. Now we have a story. Story goes like this. Binahara, sorry. Rava ignavule dichre machtarta. Somebody broke into Rava's house and stole from him. Adrinu nihale velo kablinu. Amarho v'nafik mipumid Rav. They wanted to pay him back. They felt bad. They found out that it was Rava's house, I guess. And they realized that it's not a good idea to steal from Rava's house. So they came to pay him back, and he refused. He refused to take the money back, and he said, because it came out of the mouth of Rav, even though I disagree with him in terms of whether he's right or not, I want to follow him, and I'm not going to take the money back. Now what's the halakha? So the halakha, according to everybody, basically, is that that was you know, Midas Chasidus, that what Rav was doing. Rav was correct. And they really did have to give it back, and he wanted to be machmir like Rav. That's why he was doing it. But take a look at Tosfos.
Assuming they broke into the house
at night, yeah. If you look at the bottom Tosfos, right on the left side, lo kablinu hov v'nafik b'humi the Rav.
Why would that be in Midas Chasidus?
Well, why wouldn't it be?
Why shouldn't it be? Because Yeah, it's the other way around.
Good. So actually, do you guys remember we did a shir on Midat Chasidut? You guys remember? Of Lifnim Meshuras Adin and Midas
right.
Chasidus.
Right.
And we actually talked about when is something considered a valid Lifnim Meshuras Adin or Midas Chasidus. Can you just make it up? And I remember the conclusion that we came to, I think based on Tosus, was that it's a Midas Chasidus if there's a Shita that says what you're doing. In other words, if there's an opinion... If there's, in principle, if there's an opinion that validates what you're doing, then it's a real Lifnim Meshuras Adin. But if there's nothing, then it's not. What? Right, so you would be Eino Mitzuva. But in other words, if there is a Shita like that, then it's valid. If there's no Shita like that, then it's just made up and it's not actually, it's Chasid Shota. You're being a fool. So in this case, there is a Shita like that. There's Rav. That's why he's trying to be Machmir. So if you took a look at the Tosus, though, he has a different problem. It says, Tema, ha-mechayev latzeis yidei shamayim. But what do you mean? How could he refuse to take it back? In general, with the rules of kam lebid rabimine, where I don't have to pay back, there's still a reason to pay back, to be yotzeim yidei shamayim. You know, Hashem will smile if I pay back, even if I don't have to. It's a good thing to do. It's the right thing to do. Okay? So how could he refuse to take the money from them? He's stopping them from being Yotze B'dei Shamayim. How could he do that? So he says, Kedam Parakwalim, Gabe Yachosem Parav Adashpa, Asar Torah Afilu Baal Imo, V'yesh Lomer Dekan, Lo Hayirotzim Lahachzir Elim Ken Yitchai V'Bidin Adam. So he says, apparently they had a conversation, and they were under the impression that they had to give it back, and they were only going to give it back to him if they had to give it back. In other words, he told them, look, you know, I want to follow Rav in this case, and Rav says that you're not Chayav. And at that point they said, great, let's get out of here. Like, they weren't fighting with him to give it back. They were going to give it back if they knew that they would be prosecuted for it or something like that. But if they didn't have to give it back, then they didn't want to give it back. Good? That's how he answers it. There's actually a different answer on the sheet. Let's just look at that quickly. Where is it? It's the last source on the second side of the sheet. The Chiddush Aran. The Chiddush HaRan on Sanhedrin is not the Ran. We know this because in more than one place he quotes the Ran. So,
was it?
Student, maybe, who knows? Don't know. So, he asks the same question as Tosos, but he gives a little bit more details. Tama da kate ayu ganavim tzrichan letzei yidei shamayim, he says. V'haraya midamrina b'perek polim esnan asra Torah. Esnan is the payment you give to a zonah, right? So afilu ba'al imo, klomar sha'av abishu patur min ha'esnan mivnei shu mischayev benafsho afapikein tzarechu latet ha'esnan la l'kayem dvarav. He still has to pay her for it. In other words, even though he's doing something that's terrible, he's doing something that's aser, l'gamrei, he still has to pay her. V'kev en shekin chalav isur esnan v'azer la'akriva. Fine. So he says, here, the same thing should apply. So he quotes from Rabbeinu David. Because he said something. He said he was going to pay with it. That was a different case. He said he was going to pay for it. The halakha does not require him to pay for it, but there's still a good reason to do it because he said he was going to. Once they acquired it, it belongs to them. There is no mitzvah to give it back. There's no reason to give it back in this case because it belongs to them. There is no latzeis yidei shamayim in this case. There's only a latzeis yidei shamayim in that case over there because he said he was going to give it back. So, you know, that would be the reason. Good. Fine. Now, it's 9:10. Let's keep going because there's a lot. And this is good stuff. Okay. Five lines up. Tana Rabbanan. The Torah says that there's no damim if
the sun
shines on him. What does that mean?
The next day.
Is that broad daylight?
So the Gemara
why does it say alav?
So the Gemara says bechiyah shemesh alav bilvad zarcha. The Gemara takes it very literally. It says the sun shone on him. What, it only shone on him? Does it shine on everybody else?
So
what does that mean?
That's an expression meaning like there's something very special about this guy.
Good. So ela, this is what it means. The Gemara says im barur lecha davar kishemesh she'ein lo shalom imcha hargehu v'im lav. So this means that if it's completely clear to you, you're 100% positive that he is going to kill you, then you're allowed to kill him. However, if you have even a shadow of a doubt, see what I did there? Then you're not allowed to kill him. That's the conclusion of this braita. Fair? Clear? Reasonable? Tanya Idach, there is...
Hold on, Rabbi, there's a little bit of a problem here.
Okay, what is the problem?
What's bothering Rashi? I'll tell you what's bothering Rashi.
Go ahead.
Okay, what's bothering Rashi, it's this. This takes time. You have to sit there and decipher whether or not this guy's going to kill you. So the guy's coming at you with, like, you know, an axe. And you're like, does he really want to kill you? I don't know. You know, I mean, how long do you have to actually think about this?
Good. Next, Brisa. Brisa says, Tanya Idach... Pay attention. Im zarcha hashemesh alav damim lo v'chi hashemesh alav bilvad. By the way, notice already. In the previous one, it says ein lo damim im zarcha hashemesh alav. This one says damim lo im zarcha hashemesh alav damim lo. Depends where you put the im zarcha hashemesh alav. Does it go on what comes before it, or does it go on what comes after it? Pinchas, I don't want to hear about the Tamei Hamikra. V'chi hashemesh alav bilvad zarcha. Ela im barur lecha kashemesh sheyesh lo shalom imcha al targeu v'im lav hargeu. If it's absolutely clear to you that he is not going to kill you, then you're not allowed to hurt him. However, if you have even a shmeck of a doubt and you suspect that maybe he's going to kill you, then you can stand your ground. Two completely opposing ways to read this pasuk, and it's just a nuance, but it's a hugely important nuance. Which one is it? This is what's bothering Rashi, right? Now, on the other hand, what's the other? Somebody say, you know, somebody make the case the other way. Why we shouldn't be, well, frankly, we shouldn't be so trigger happy. What, you think maybe he's going to do something to you, so then you just take out your shotgun?
We can hurt somebody else, like
say there, but you don't know if you're not sure.
About a couple of years or so ago,
but you're not like you know, you don't really know anything about the guy. It could be that he's just going to run away.
He's in your house.
He's in your house, but percentage of robbers? I don't know. What percentage of robbers are prepared to kill? I mean, that's kind of like what we're dealing with here.
Take a situation from where I come from, you would shoot.
Right, fine. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because just based on history. Right.
Okay.
Also, where maybe we
come from is innocent.
Right.
But maybe that's exactly the point. It's situational, that in the case here is one situation that is more likely that they will have for you. There's no suffix, and I don't know, somewhere else where it's unlikely that you could go on there for.
So the Gemara is stymied. Kasha, stama astama. The Gemara doesn't know at first what to do. It says, I have these two opposing braitot. These braitot are contradicting each other. One of them says that the onus is on he's going to kill you, and the other one says it's the other way. So what do we do? So the Gemara says, lo kasha. It's not a question. It depends who the burglar is. Kan ba'av ala ben, kan ba'ben ala av. I'll let you guys work this one out. In one situation, you're not worried about the ganav. In the other situation, you are worried about the ganav. In one situation, the son is breaking into the father's house. In another situation, the father is breaking into the son's house. So which one is the more dangerous case?
Yesh odamim chayav, Rashi brings the...
I know what Rashi says. No, I'm saying, like, what would you guess beforehand? Which way would you go? If a son is breaking in, then
it's more dangerous.
That's more. Then the father should know that the son is. It's ironic, right? Then the father should know that the son is prepared to kill him, so the father should strike first, right? Whereas, ironically, if it's the other way around, so if the father was breaking into the house, then the son, even though he's more liable to kill the father, right? He knows that the father's not going to attack him, so he's not allowed to attack in self-defense. That's what Rashi says. Av habal ben. Rashi says, b'machteret misafik al yargeu b'no. The vade rach miha aval b'no. Because we know that the father will have rachamim on his son. V'afilu matil mamano lo yargeu. Hilkach damim lo ad shiodeh lecha kashem eshuach zari alecha visonecha. This is confusing because remember this is a three-step process. The only reason that the robber is going to kill the owner is because he knows that the owner is going to stand up for him. So how does that work out over here? I remember being confused by this question. It's like we said it. So, some quotes. What? Yeah, you
know. Why don't you explain it like it's just koladam?
Okay, so hold on. Hold on. We're not there yet. So, why, by the way, why is the father going to have more rachamim than the son is? Just naturally?
Yeah.
So, I remember Rabbi Razner quoted Rav Dessler. That
it's come up somebody just sure recently.
Probably. Rav Dessler comes up a lot, especially in the Kudras of Chesed, where he says that Ahava is Miloshon Hav, to give, and that people tend to think that you give to whom you love, and the truth is that more often than not, the way that it develops is that you love those to whom you give. So the father spends his whole life giving to the son, so he's going to develop more love. Then the son, who keeps taking from his father, is going to develop less. So that's why it works out like that. Fine. Now, Amarav, kol da'ati alai b'machtarta, katil nalei labar me'rav chanina barshila. Rav comes in again, he says, if anybody were to come into my house, I would kill them. Unless it was Rav Chanina barshila. My taima. I love this line. If you say it's because it's a tzaddik, hakati b'machtarta. What's he doing in the Tana? What's he doing in the Tana? I love that line. Mishum dekim lebigavei demerachem alai kerachem av al haben. No, because I know that he loves me like a father loves a son. Okay? Yeah, did you want to say something there?
If this is the accepted logic, then the son breaking into the father's house should know that the father loves him more and therefore wouldn't hurt him.
Right, that's why I said it gets confusing. But no, it doesn't necessarily mean that. See, the robber, think about it for a second. The robber is not killing the Baal HaBayit because the Baal HaBayit is going to kill him. He's killing the Baal HaBayit because the Baal HaBayit is going to stop him from stealing. Okay. I was confused for a second.
Is
too.
It not? It's not
circular.
He'll defend. It's not that.
He'll defend, so the robber will have no choice but to kill him.
No, so the robber to defend himself once he's decided to go in is fine, but is there a limit? I mean, you can say he's not going to. The father wouldn't kill the son for whatever he's got in the house. Do you see what I'm saying?
The son doesn't think that the father is going to kill him. So if the son is the thief...
No, if the son goes in and he knows that the father won't kill him, right?
Right.
Then...
he'll still kill him.
Why?
Because he wants to get out. The father will try to stop him.
Because he wants the...
His father will try to stop him, but he won't kill him. Okay. Yeah, so... that's a tzaddikul. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. Damim. By the way, so what we learned from Rav, though, is that it's not only a father. It's anybody who you think is not going to do anything to you. If it's a stranger, l'chora, you would. I mean, I think that's the logical outcome of it. Because unless he's your father, anybody less than your father and the analog of your father, you have the right to stand your ground. Because if it's your son, right? Because that's a high threshold, right? Your son is still going to have more machamim on you than a stranger, right? Maybe less than a very, very good friend. But the threshold is pretty high. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan, damim lo bein b'chol bein b'shabbos. Ein lo damim bein b'chol bein b'shabbos. Okay. So the Brisa teaches us that you're allowed to stand your ground and kill. Doesn't matter whether it's on Chol or on Shabbos. Sorry, I should say he will be liable whether it's Shabbos or Chol because of the rules of standing your ground are the same over there. In other words, it doesn't actually affect anything. So the Gemara says, wait a second though. Bishlama ein lo damim bein b'chol bein b'shabbos. I understand why you need to tell me that if he has no damim. Meaning that he's going to kill. Bein b'chol bein b'shabbos. It's trik sakotay tachamina midi dehava aharuge beizdin. The b'shabbos lo katlinan. Kamash malan de katlinan. Because I might have thought that, and this is an interesting. This is to throw a wrench into the works. Okay, I might have thought the following: if a person commits an aveira, and he's liable to misa. And the Beis Din decided he's liable to Misa, the Beis Din is not allowed to carry out Misa's Beis Din on Shabbos. Aside from all the malachos of Shabbos, you're not allowed, there's a mitzvah, you're not allowed to perform Chiyuv Mita on Shabbos.
The Beis Din doesn't sit on Shabbos.
But let's say they already sat. Let's say they already sat. So there's a separate mitzvah, no Misa's Beis Din on Shabbos. Okay? Apparently, there was a Hava Amina, it was an initial thought, that because of that rule,
you
would not be allowed to stand your ground on Shabbos. Or, no, I should say that differently. Because of that rule, the idea that Ein Lo Damim would not make the person patur from paying. Now, how would that work? Why would that be? Why would there even be a Hava Amina like that? What would have to be true in order for that to be a valid Hava Amina?
Happen one after the other, maybe.
What happened one after the other? Stealing?
Yeah. Stealing and the Chiyuv of Mita have to happen together.
Oh, you mean like the breaking? The breaking, yeah. And the Chiyuv of Mita. But they did. They do. He's in the he's in the house. He's in your house. The whole time he's in your house, he's Chayav Mita. Oh, so and that's kind of the giveaway. What do we mean by Chayav Mita? What do we mean by that?
That the Beis Din can kill him.
Beis Din? Is there a Beis Din here?
No.
Is there a Beis Din?
The
Baal HaBayit. So, is that somehow analogous to the Beis Din killing a person because of an Aveira?
No.
Apparently it is. Otherwise we wouldn't need this limud. We wouldn't have a Havamina. Apparently, somehow, the Baal HaBayit, so that's one option, right? One option is that the Baal HaBayit is the Beit Din.
And because it's on the Shabbos.
Which tells you a lot about how this thing works, and it's actually quite surprising. Because what we thought initially was self-defense, pure self-defense, maybe is not.
It's punishment.
Maybe it's in some way punishment.
We're going back in the thought process of Beit Din has to be unanimous.
Yes.
And if it's just one person, how can it be the same?
There's no doubt that this is, you know, not natural, not normal. He's not a Beit Din. He's not a Beit Din. However, somehow he is apparently, according to the Hava Amina for sure, he is performing like a Beit Din in some way. Or alternatively, we're being very liberal about the meaning of the word Chiyuv Mita, but that becomes hard to understand. Now, here's the thing. What happens when we get to the Kamash Malan? This is where there's gray area when you learn Gemara. Almost every Kamash Malan is a big question mark. Kamash Malan means, so this comes to teach us that is not true. But the question becomes,
what is not true?
Because there are two possibilities. What are the two possibilities?
There's a different case.
Okay. But let's say it's not that it's a different case. In other words, the logic went like this. I might have thought that because the Baal HaBayit is really just acting on behalf of the Beit Din and this person is a Chayav Mita, so if it's a Chayav Mita, just like the Beit Din is not allowed to perform that on Shabbat, so he's not allowed to perform that on Shabbat. Kamash Malan, that's not true, and he is allowed to kill on Shabbat. But is that because our Hava Mina was wrong? Or is that because Ahav Aminu was right, but nevertheless, he's allowed to kill? In other words, does this mean it's not a Chiyuv Beit Din? It's not similar to a Chiyuv Beit Din? And that's why he's allowed to kill on Shabbat? It's coming to tell you that it's not that way? Or is it still like a Chiyuv Beit Din, but it's a special case where you're still allowed to kill him on Shabbat, even though normally a Beit Din is not allowed to kill?
I would say that.
But there's no way to know purely from the Gemara. All it says is Kamash Malan. Let's keep going.
You're talking about insofar as how does the person look at it, how does he come to these conclusions?
Well, what would the nafkamina be? What would the practical difference be? Could we come up with what would another practical difference between whether or not the person, the balabait is acting like a Beit Din, or whether he's just doing self-defense? What would another practical difference be?
I mean, you would have all the evidence there. If the guy's, entered his house and he's carrying a weapon or something like that, and, you got to react. You can't just, like...
The point is, though, what would there be a halachic difference if we see him as only performing an onesh, or whether we see him as doing self-defense?
Also, practical difference for him, you say?
For anything. What would any practical difference be?
But, Brett, is the time that he's doing it in Tochidei, in a minute...
Like, it would have to be. So, in other words,
in real time, if he's reacting in real time.
So,
whereas the base then is a process that they start.
So, you would say that perhaps if it wasn't, then maybe we would even open up the possibility of him killing the intruder even on the way out. If he was like the Beit Din. And he's no longer in danger.
Yeah, because then he's
it's a possibility. I can see it as a possibility. There's actually another possibility in the Gemara. Let's keep going. The truth is, the Gemara is going to take a digression for a second, because it says, I understand that side. I understand why you have to tell me Bein B'chol, Bein B'Shabbat, for Ein Lo Damim. We learned something. However, the other side makes no sense. Because it also says, El Damim Lo, Bein B'chol, Bein B'Shabbat, Hashta B'chol HaKalina Nei, B'Shabbat Mibaya. If you're talking about a case where he's Damim Lo, and therefore you can't kill him, because he's not going to do anything to you, right? So, why do I need to know about both Shabbat and Chol? If I'm not allowed to kill him on Chol, why would I be allowed to kill him on Shabbat? Like, why would I think that I'd be allowed to kill him on Shabbat? Like, what's the logic there? It's not necessary. It's actually teaching you the exact opposite. It's teaching you that, let's say the intruder broke into your house, and then he fell... He didn't fall through the skylight. The wall fell down on him. So if it's during the week, you have to help him. But if it's Shabbos,
no,
so he's in not, theory,
well, he's
in theory, if he's Chayav Mita, he's dead. If he's Chayav Mita, then it's like he's dead, and you're not allowed to save him. You're not allowed to pick up the debris in order to save him.
Because it's reminding me now.
Now, in the end, Kamash Malan, you do save him, even on Shabbat.
Why?
Because that's the question. Yeah. But Kamash Malan, you do. But there was a Havamina that you wouldn't. That's what we were interested in. Now, here's another one. Amar of Sheshet, Lo Nitzcha Lefriel Lelegan, Tanu Rabban, another Brayta, Vehuka Bechol Adam, Umeit Bechol Mita. The word Vehuka means... anybody can do it. In other words, it doesn't have to be, this is an interesting thing, it doesn't have to be the homeowner. You could be a neighbor, and you see that the guy broke into the homeowner's house, and the homeowner is home, the homeowner has to be home, and you go into the home, and you kill the intruder. That's okay.
Yeah, but that, you might have thought of that.
Is at the start of the process because he's worried the guy's going to break into him.
No, he's worried that the intruder is going to encounter the balabayit and kill the balabayit.
Right, he's not worried.
That's why.
Well,
that's why. And then umeit b'chol mita. Now this is interesting. You're allowed to kill him however you want.
Home alone,
you just go nuts, right? You pull out paint cans and set fire to the doorknob and all kinds of things. By the way, they should have been dead. They should have died like 20 times in that movie. Anyways, you can kill him however you want. It's drich. I understand why I need to learn, I need a lima to tell me that anybody's allowed to do it. Because I might have thought that you would be allowed to know. Now here finally the Gemara says, Kamashmalan de Rodefu. Finally the Gemara tips his hand and says, the reason why, the only reason why the other person is allowed to do it is because he's saving the Balabayit from a Rodef, and that's why he's allowed to do it. Vafilu achar nami. Because in a regular case where a rodef achar harodef is pater, right? If I see somebody, if I see the Green Goblin chasing Spider-Man, I'm allowed to shoot the Green Goblin, right? Because I'm allowed to do that. A rodef achar rodef. Ela umeid b'chol mita shatayu chalimito lamali miotze lamali. Why should I be allowed to kill him however I want? Now, what's the havamina? What would I think? Maybe. So first of all, they say, actually, I shouldn't even need a limit for this. After all, he's just like a rotzeach. Now, what is that? That is a punishment, my friends. They want to say, the Gemara wants to suggest that I would have already known that I'm allowed to kill the intruder with any death because I know that I'm allowed to kill a murderer with any death. A murderer, the Beit Din, is allowed to kill him with any death. What? So now he's being compared to a rotzeach who is already killed, right? It's if the Beit Din cannot do it in the way that the Torah prescribes, yeah. Cannot do it that way, you can kill him however you want.
Why?
You're allowed to kill him however you want. So the Gemara says, no, that's not a good limud. I'm just going to finish this. Fine, stop there. So this teaches you that you're allowed to kill him however you want. Now, this is potentially another afkamina, right? If he's a Beit Din, so then he's limited in how he's allowed to kill. Right? If he's only acting like a Beit Din, then he can only kill with Saif. He's only allowed to do that. Now, take a look at the sheet. Now, the Gemara's conclusion is that he's allowed to kill however he wants. If you take a look at the sheet on the first side, take a look at the Ran and the Rambam on the first side of the sheet. The Ran says, "Masnis and Abba Machtaras Nidan Hashem Sofo." I need the Tana de Ben Sora Amora Nidan Hashem Sofo. Tana Habab Machtaras Nidan Hashem Sofo. I told you about that before. That it's because of Nidan Hashem Sofo that it's being taught here. Avagav the Dinei the Abba Machtaras Nidan Kil Chato B'Sayif B'Stamita El Dimenu Yachal Amito B'Sayif Yachal Amito B'Ezamita Shiyotze Okudita B'Gemara. The Ran preserves the Hava Amina. The Ran actually says that all things being equal, if you can, try to kill the Rodef like a Rotzeach. Try to kill him like the Beit Din would. If you can't, then you can do whatever you want, just like the Beit Din can do whatever it wants. Which means the Ran has preserved the idea that the Balabayit is really just a proxy for the Beit Din. Who disagrees? Look at the Rambam. The Rambam above Machter Ben Bayom Ben Balai Leino Dami Malayim Har Go Balabayit Oshar Adam Pturin. Anybody's allowed to kill him, morning, night, doesn't matter. V'reshut Yesh to Kol Har Go Ben Bechol Ben Mishabat Bechol Mita Sheyechol In Lamito. Shneimar Eino Damim. He doesn't mention anything about using a sword, right? He just says self-defense. You're allowed to kill. So this appears to be a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ran about what your limitations are. There are other nafkaminas. Do you have to warn the guy?
If you have to warn him. If the difference between
Beit Din don't warn it, but it's necessary in order to carry out the mitzvah. So the Gemara actually gets into that. The Gemara says, no, you don't have to warn him.
The guy's last time to turn around and get out in order to avoid killing him.
That's not the hachra that we're talking about. That's a good idea.
But it's by the same logic. If he breaks in on Shabbat, right, it's Chayav Mita. So can the Baba act as a head in for that as well? You know, where do we stop? Sees the guy in the streets, not in his house.
No, because this is obviously a chiddush where the person is doing vigilante. The question is this vigilante justice or is this self defense?
No, so if it's vigilante, if he's doing something else, that's
so this
wrong,
is the only case. So no, obviously not. The Gemara doesn't. Torah doesn't allow that. The Torah only allows it in this case. I think the safest bet is to say that it's both. I think I think the safest argument is to say that it's both. It has elements of both, which seems to be what the Gemara is saying. It has both. It has both of them, and that usually comes out more forceful. So yeah. Now, take a look. Let's go back to the top of the page. We're finished with the Gemara. Let's look at the top of the page of the Rashba. So the Rashba was also bothered by Rav, just like Michael was. Well, the person who wrote the Shaila to the Rashba was bothered. It says, "Umash shalta milti de Rav abav machter v'natal kelim v'yatzah patur." Remember, Rav said that if you take the kelim to keep them, "Vanhartet einin mihayi de masechet Sanhedrin min hatema hu liyod kanav ze konek kli shal bal bayit v'ibnei shem hargod de patur alav." This is crazy. How could it be? "Umay kamadami," and he says, but by the way, technically it doesn't make sense. "May kamadami lahayi de gonev kis b'shabbat." How can you compare it to somebody who steals on Shabbat and then ends up keeping it? Kasha, tahatam beitin kamachayvi le mita al melaches Shabbat. That's because the beitin is mechayev him mita. That means he has a punishment of mita and a punishment of paying, and so the punishment of mita comes and knocks out the punishment of paying. V'lomatzi lechiyuvim mamon. Derachmana amar kedei rishato mishum rishachat atamachayvo. That's kam lebe derab mine. The Gemara has a limud that says mechdei rishato. You're only allowed to be mechayev him for one sin. If he commits two sins at the same time, you can only get him for one. You can get him for the more severe one. V'had v'achter lo damya lahada in b'davar chiyuv mita beitin klal elamamal luchudei. The Rashba is obvious. The Shoel is taking a side here. He's saying this is pure self-defense. He says there's no beitin over here. This is just person performing self-defense, and it happens to be that the guy is considered like he's dead. But if he doesn't die, then why should he not have to give it back? So here comes the Rashba. He says, "Tshuva, lo mishum kedei rishato patrilei lahav degon of kis ela mishum dechtiv lo yason." We actually did this sugya, I think, in Makos. There's two limudim for kam lebi derabinei. One is the one I mentioned, kedei rishato atamachayvo v'yatamachayvo mishum shtei rishayot. You can only be mechayev him for one thing. You can't be mechayev him for two things. But there's another one, which is lo yihya ason. Pinchas, what's that pasuk? Lo yason anon she'anesh, right?
Yeah.
Right, if you're fighting and then you hit a woman who's pregnant, so if there is, if she dies, you kill the baby. Now the law is that for killing a baby in the womb, you pay the husband. So if she dies though, then you don't pay because you're chayav mita. If she doesn't, then you do pay. So if you don't, if she dies though, im yason, then you don't have to pay. That's another case of kam lebi derabinei that the Torah actually mentions. And it's a separate limud. Why do we need both limudim?
Why
do we need both? So it must be that they each
teach
something different and cover different situations. So the Rashba argues that this situation is covered by lo ya'ason and it's not covered by bichdei rishato. How does that work? K'tetan v'pergelu naros habal bito v'abas bito ein lahem knas mishum demischai b'nafshar shmitatim b'itin. Let's find the important part. Look at the underlined part. Time of the milta de chol de evshal avoli de mita patro akasav mimamon. It says anybody who could be killed is patro from mamon, which is different than saying that they're chayav mita. Uketetani chizkia mak nefesh behema yishalmena umak adam yumat. Ma mak behema lo chalakta bein shogi lemezid lepatro mimamon. Who said this, by the way? You remember? This is Rashi. This is what Rashi was quoting this Tana Bechizki. He said, the fact that you're going to be pater from Mamon, even if you only did it b'shogeg, and the Beitin wasn't going to kill you, so what does that indicate? That means that if there was even the potential for Misa, you're going to be pater. Look at the bold part. Anybody who could die in that situation, even if it's not from punishment by Beit Din, you're going to be pater. So, in other words, Bechtei Rishato tells you one thing. It tells you that if you performed an Avera, which carries with it the death penalty, now, when is that death penalty carried out? Much later, right? The Beit Din does that. So when the Beit Din is evaluating your case, they say, okay, look, at the same time that you were stealing, you're being Mechal Shabbat, so we cannot be Mechayev you Mama. That's covered by Bechtei Rishato. However, at the same time, if you were doing something that somebody could have killed you while you were doing it, even if nobody did, you'd also still be Pater, and that's learned from Belo Ya'asa. That's where that's learned from.
How's that learned from Belo Ya'asa?
It's a great question. I think it's learned from there because it was done by accident. And therefore, it gets covered with the Shogigin issue. In other words, that's connected to Tana de Bechizkia, who says that even if you only did it, the Shogig, you're still going to be Pater. I was wondering the same thing myself. Where is the limud? I think it's because you did it by accident. When you hit the woman, the context of the Pasuk, you hit the woman by accident. You were trying to hit her. You were trying to hit somebody else, and you hit her by accident. So you're going to be Pater. You're going to be Pater, though. Right, that's a shogeg where you go to Ir Miklat. Okay, that is the Rashba. All right, last issue that we'll do tonight, I think. Maybe two more, but second last issue for sure. And the bottom of the page, take a look. Actually, you know, it's already the Rambam, the third from the bottom source, the Rambam, Hilchos Gneiva. Habava machteras ben bayom ben melayla in ledamim. No, sorry, not that Rambam. Look at Rashi below that. Rashi says, "Mizarcha Hashem shalav ein ze ela kemin mashal. Im barur lecha davar sheyesh lecha shal shalom imcha keshemesh haze shehu shalom baolam." Kach pashut l'chashenu ba l'harog, afilu yamad ba l'amamun k'negdo, kegon av achoter l'gnov mamon ha-ben, b'yadu ashrach mi'av al-ben, v'einu ba l'iskin efashot. So Rashi takes that side. Rashi takes the side that says that it has to be clear to you that he's not going to do anything to you in order for you to not be allowed to do anything to him. But if it's not clear to you that he's not going to do anything to you, then you are allowed to hurt him. And that's how he reads Imzar Chashem HaShalav, with the metaphor. Right? That it's a metaphor. Take a look at the Ramban. Ramban says, Ulayit kavena rav lomar, he's talking about Rashi, shimat uhu edim kodem shaba balabait vikiruhu. I don't think this is what Rashi is saying. This is the Ramban Shita. It says, you know what it means? How is it clear to you that he's not going to do anything? Because other people saw him. V'aganav yada behem, einu baal iske nefashot achshav, shekvar ra'a shekiru edim, v'im yarog v'yavo edim beitim v'yargu. The Ramban comes up with a case where you're not allowed to kill the Ganav. That's a case where other Edom already saw the Ganav. So because, and the Edom knows that. And since the Edom knows that since the Ganav knows that Edom saw it go into the house, he knows he won't get away with killing. He won't get away with killing, and therefore, the Balabait is not allowed to do anything to him. So in other words, if there's some other way of knowing that the Balabait, even if the guy's even if the guy hates you, the guy might hate you, but you know that he's not going to do anything because he's not going to want to go to jail. He's not going to want to, you know, be held liable for murder. And everybody knows that it's him. You're not allowed to do anything, and it's not mutter to do anything to him. That's one case that the Rambam mentioned. Turn the page over. The Rambam, similar to Rashi, says Echad Baba Machter Oganav Shenimtza B'Toch Gago Shel Adam or B'Toch Chatziro. The Gemara gets into that if it's in a different part of your house, like on your roof or in your chatzir, or B'Toch Karpifo Ben Bayom Ben Belayla. Doesn't matter whether it's day, doesn't matter whether it's night. V'Lama Ne'amar B'Machter L'Fisha Derech Rov Oganavim Lavo B'Machter B'Layla. The Rambam says the only reason why it mentions B'Machteret at night is because it's typical. But even if he came during the day, it would be the same din. In other words, even if the sun was shining on him physically, you would still be allowed to do something. You would still be allowed to fight back, right? Now the Ravid says, "Eini nimna milechtov adati." This is amazing. Shnirli af al pisha darshu chachamim. Pay attention. Imzar Hashem shalav derech mashal. Even though the chachamim say imzar Hashem is derech mashal, im barul chadav gashemesh shelo baalis kinefasha. That's what Chazal say. Af al pi kain ein mikra yotze midei pshuto. Pasuk cannot be taken out of its simple meaning. Biyom eino rashai lahargo. She'ein ganav ba bayom ela hashmata shomet ubareach miyad ve'einu mitakev lignom mamon gadol v'lamor al ba'alav lahargo ela ganav ba'layla mnei she'ganav layla yodea she'bala bayit ba'bayit o ba'la harog o liharag aval ganav yom ein ba'la bayit matur b'beito ushmuta ba'almau v'chai roshi kol mevin daylo ba'ze. What's interesting is that on the one hand, the Ravid said something really surprising. He said, "In mikra yotze midei pshuto," and therefore, even though Chazal actually said it was a mashal, and a reasonable mashal, it's not a crazy thing that Chazal are saying. Imzar Hashem mashalav, they're saying it's if it's clear to you. He says, "In mikra yotze midei pshuto," even though they say it's a mashal, it still has to be the simple meaning. It still has to be held up, and therefore, he wants to say that a ganav who comes in the morning when the sun is shining, you're not allowed to do anything to him. You're only allowed to do something if he comes at night. The flip side is he gives an explanation for it, which means he's really opening the door because he's saying, okay, any ganav who comes in the day knows is not really planning to stick around and he's going to run away because he's not going to do anything crazy. But what if you know that he is? What if it's South Africa? Right? So then would the Ravid still say what he says? He might. I don't know. It's pretty amazing.
Can I throw in a thought? I mean, it's kind of like Hilu. Look, Geneva, at the end of the day, it's a chet, right? If people do chatayim. They do it, say, beprotiut, whatever, say, stealing or yomrim, whatever. Why? Because they think nobody's seeing them. In fact, it's God seeing them.
Right.
But if they do it outside, they know that God's seeing them. You know, it doesn't matter if you know, it's a lehefer. It's like they're not God sees them, but everybody sees them. So it's right. Not like they're hiding anything.
Right.
When did the Ravid start counting Sefirot Ha'Aman? Where did he put his tefillin? To what extent does he say right. In mikra yotze midei pshuto?
That's a great question. And it comes up all of his. What about ayin tachat ayin? What about lifnei iver lo titen michshol? What does it mean?
Practical thing in terms of killing someone at that time, it wasn't instant with the gun. It was actually a process of getting into the proximity of the person to do it.
It was that.
Right?
So what do you mean? You can kill with an arrow. You're saying it's not going to happen. Okay, so what's your point? So what's your point?
It's a different threat. You're saying what's it doesn't matter with the rival table.
Does it matter? I mean, you know,
I think the Ravid would say it was different today because you have a threat immediately.
Because they have a gun?
Yeah.
But who cares if they have a gun? You can have a knife and it still would be dangerous. If the guy really, really wants to steal from you, that's the point. If the guy really wants to steal from you, he doesn't care if you're going to defend yourself. He doesn't care. He's going to kill you. That's the point. So the Ravid is claiming for some reason that during the day that won't happen. Well, frankly?
Today he might say it's different.
But then the problem is, how could he say that? In mikra yotze midei pshuto. On the one, that's what I'm finding so fascinating about the Ravid. On the one hand, he says, no, you take it as it says in the Torah, and it sounds like a gzirat hakatuv. If it comes during the day, that's it. On the other hand, hold on. No, let me take that back. I know exactly what the Ravid is doing. The Ravid is pointing out that the Gemara actually did take the pasuk, not in its simple meaning. Imzar Hashem Shalav. The Gemara said, what does that mean? That means if it's clear to you, like the Shemesh. That's a metaphor. That is definitely a metaphor. The Ravid is saying, yes. But also, Imzar HaShemesh Alav, if it's during the daytime, which tends to be a time that Ganavim don't, overstay their welcome when they break into houses. If they break in their houses during the day, it means that they're going to go in and they're going out because they don't think anybody's in the house. That's his key. They don't think anybody's in the house. They think everybody's at work.
What?
That's what he says. They think people are at work. People are in the house at night when they go to sleep. But they think people are at work, which is still true to this day, obviously. And so that's why he's breaking in during the day. And so the Ravid is saying, if he breaks in during the day and you can tell that he thinks that you're not home, then you're not allowed to do anything to him because he's just going to run away. If he breaks in at night, he knows that you're there, and that means that he came in knowing. So in other words, yes, I do think that there's a rationale here. It's not a gzera dekatu. What?
We've never wrote it today.
You could say
that. I don't think that's true. I think it's still true now.
You could use the opposite logic as well.
You hear all the time stories about people walking into their houses, finding that somebody was in there, and the person just runs away.
Mm-hmm.
You hear all the time.
From
no, in Israel, not in South Africa.
Yeah, I'm saying, are you saying he's riding through Israel?
No, I'm not talking about Israel. I'm in America also. I mean, meaning...
So men, the choice of weapon kind of makes it a different thing. You're at risk as soon as the person comes in.
I have to believe that a large percentage of robbers are not willing to kill. They may not even have weapons. That's a line. There's a line you're crossing.
Maybe that's the difference.
It's not a simple line.
If someone walks into a house unarmed, right?
Right.
Knowing that the
they don't know he's unarmed.
And no, I'm saying maybe that should be the deciding factor. If someone walks into the house unarmed, right? Not knowing whether the balabai or whatever else has the mean, you know, a weapon or whatever else to do something to him or whatever else, then maybe he shouldn't be considered someone who's prepared to kill.
That's right. That's what the rabbi is saying.
Shouldn't be.
No, he shouldn't be seen as someone who's prepared to kill. The person who's coming into the house unarmed, right?
Correct.
And if
the person is coming into the house unarmed, then that's a good indication that he's not going to kill.
Right. Armed in daylight.
If he's armed in daylight, then I think. Yes, I think the Raivid would acknowledge that there are situations. I take back what I said before. I don't think it's exerosikatsu, because he applied logic. So once he applied logic, that means that he's giving the rationale for the pasuk, which means that if it doesn't apply, then it doesn't apply. That's fine. He's just saying, Chazal didn't cover this. He's pointing that out. Chazal did not cover this. Chazal took this pasuk and took out of it a metaphor that the whole meaning of Imzar HaShemesh is teaching about what kind of person they are. And he says, yes, that's true, it's teaching that. But keep in mind that it also, the simple meaning of the pasuk is that if it's daylight, they don't expect anybody to be in the house, and therefore they're not going to actually kill people that confront them. And that's also true. That's what the Ravid is arguing. Do we have a Marav minion?
Yeah,
we do. Okay, good. So let's do a little bit more. I just love this. I actually haven't read this all the way through. I only read the first part of it, and I just had to put it on the sheet. Take a look at the Migdal Oz. Rav Shachter says it like this. The Migdal Oz is one of the commentaries in the bottom of the Rambam. He usually makes it onto the page. Basically, the job of the Migdal Oz is to defend the Rambam from the Ravid, no matter what. I once heard him say this. Rav Shachter goes like this. He says, if the Ravid points out that there's a Gemara against the Rambam, the Ravid says there's no Gemara. The Migdal Oz says there's no Gemara like that. If he says there's a Mishnah against the Rambam, he says there's no Mishnah like that. If he says there's a Pasuk, he says there's no Pasuk like that. That's how the Rav Shachter says. But the problem with that is that you can't, you know, really trust the Migdal Oz because he's already told you what he's going to do at all costs. But let's take a look at what he says. This is amazing. Look at this. Va'ani Omer, Rosho Ketem Paz Yakaram. He's talking about the Ravid. Ani Omer, Rosho Ketem Paz Yakaram Upaz, Udvarav Tovim, Ulamochim Yin Am, Uvam Ish Navuv Yilavev, Bidivre Hagadah, Hameshuchim Etalev. I don't even know what all this means. I just know what he's saying, that it's beautiful words. He's talking about the Ravid.
The Ravid.
He's talking about the Ravid. Ach! Lafiadin lo kol habibarin shavin, v'lo kol mekamot shavin, v'lo kol azmanin mishtanim, v'lo kol bnei adam da'atanim. Not everything is always the same. V'kol shehem haganavim, asher orchotem ekshim unilozim b'ma'agalotam avonotehem v'chatatam lifnehem anan choshech v'afila menudat limtzo petach yel'u einayim lehem v'lo yir'u naga lavan adamdam ki ragleim la'ra yarutu v'yimaru lishfoch dam. Says you can't trust the ganavim. Kol shekein lasod masa besvara she'ein lanu ela masha'am b'torah. He basically rejects the Ravid. He says you cannot trust ganavim, and that's what the Torah is telling you, is that you can't even come up with logic for ganavim. You can't even say, oh, if he comes in during the day, he's not really going to do anything to you. You can't trust ganavim. Al kein sider Rambam zal dvarav al piya gemara. That's why the Rambam only goes according to the Gemara ben Torah Mora. Umarve gam hu yore. Umarve. Meroa gamu yura. Shuv matati li raya b'yerushalmi perek b'tzor amur. The garsin ben bayom ben b'layla pamim shubal ignov pamayim pamim shubal harog amar tehim gana vaday v'hargo in hargo nerag pamim shubal ignov. Okay, the point is it says b'layla ubayom. So that's like what the Rambam says, b'layla ubayom. Okay. You know what? We'll stop there. Shkoyach, is it a lot? Shkoyach, it's good stuff, yeah? The whole parak is like this, by the way.